Blog Talk Radio.
Good evening. This is Jane Hoffman coming to you live from Duluth, Minnesota, with a minus 10 wind chill. John from Santa Monica will be joining us in just a jiffy. I'm assuming it's 70 to 80 degrees there. And Bob Aldridge from North Hollywood will be joining as well. Well, tonight's topic has shifted a little. I just wanted to give a brief indication that I wrote a fairly blood-curdling article in the Duluth Reader this week. I am somewhat fearing retribution from the local police. I hope they do not interpret my last 2 to 3 lines of street justice that I am going to go out with any type of weapon and attack law enforcement. That wasn't my intent. What I meant by street justice is that in the streets, if you live and die by the streets and you are facing law enforcement every day or you're facing situations where you're being tested, that you would be willing to die for your brother if it was not so even so much someone worthy to die, but that you would be there as a sacrificial lamb, as a Christian, to be willing to lay down your life for a brother, because that is what the gospel preaches. That doesn't mean that I'm never going to lay down my life for a white brother or sister, but in lieu of the events this week, I felt quite stimulated to defend black youth that are being continually killed in a rather impulsive manner by police. Now, I did examine the grand jury testimony of Michael Brown, and he was rather verbally harassing towards Darren Wilson. He also had eradicated movements, a lot of things that didn't make sense. He feared nobody. He had no respect for law enforcement. And Darren Wilson admitted he was petrified by the young boy who was 6'4", the same height as him. There was a 10-year age difference between the two. They were both born in the month of May. But I were Darren Wilson, and the child did not stop for me, and he was causing commotion, I probably would have, after that confrontation by the window, I would have pulled over. I would have waited for backup. I wouldn't have got out of the car. I wouldn't have used a gun. And half the witnesses said that when he was reapproaching the officer, that he was quite a bit of a distance away. He was staggering because of a shot. And I will still side with the Brown family that he did not have to be shot 6 times. Now, the other alternative is that Darren Wilson could have circled the block once or twice waiting for backup. He didn't have any control over those two youth. And there was no reason to shoot an unarmed black person. I know Bob may disagree with me. Now, the other, John is on the line now. I'm just going to bring up one more looped-in event. There was a grand jury witness named DeAndre Joshua, who 2 or 3 articles describe as an employed young black man who probably gave honest testimony. He was probably one of the witnesses who said that there were about 5 witnesses who said that Brown had his hands up, both fists in a ball, about shoulder length high, and he was attempting to surrender, but some people say that he approached the police in a hostile manner when he came around the second time and pivoted. So apparently this DeAndre Joshua eyewitness was found dead in his parked car the night the indictment was released. And as a result, Darren Wilson was not indicted. Jordan was found dead this week inside a parked car near the Canfield Green Apartments, the same apartments that Michael Brown lived. The Ferguson police officer killed Brown in front of that complex. A grand jury heard evidence in the case but failed to return an indictment, as we mentioned. And DeAndre Joshua, age 20, was one of the eyewitnesses. So one local resident said that 4 individuals were discussing plans to kill somebody on Monday night though it was unclear, and if they plan to target DeAndre Joshua, they didn't mention him by name. But Joshua's family believes that the Ferguson witness was killed over the grand jury decision not to indict Brown's killer. Others have said that witnesses who spoke out and supported Darren Wilson's account of the shooting were also being subliminally threatened. And that testimony came from theinquisitor.com. I read a few similar accounts. I'm going to pull John into the show now. One moment. John?
Hi, greetings.
Hi, my computer is it's not spot on tonight. It's behind 2 to 3 seconds. How's your evening going?
Yeah, it was wonderful. I had a nice evening at church. I played some drums for the Spanish church. They did a 7th anniversary, and so it was a nice event, different churches coming together and people performing. And it was just a beautiful night, you know, like Koreans, Chinese, Americans, Hispanics getting together in church. And I have to tell you, you know, maybe a couple times we've had the police come out over the last few years because the music was a little too loud, but never with guns drawn, never with, you know, people assaulting them.
Was it
an
outdoor service?
A church service, yeah.
Okay, Bob just beeped, and I'm going to pull him in too.
Hello.
Good evening, Bob.
I just came in, so I don't know what was said before, but
I'm going to bring it up as soon as you say hello.
Okay.
We're spending the first 15 minutes on a recap of the Ferguson indictment, the one that did not occur, and the fact that a 20-year-old black child was killed Monday night in the same town because he was an eyewitness who supported Darren Wilson's account of the events. Now, this was an employed black child, age 20, who was also a friend of Dorian Johnson, the same kid who was friends with Michael Brown. So the conspiracy theories are that he testified against Brown's, he had testified against the deceased defense, and that set him up. I guess there were 24 witnesses, so hopefully not all 24 are going to be shot down, but he was found dead sitting up in his white Grand Prix on Monday night, late at night, after the indictment was announced, or lack of indictment.
Right.
So I just wanted to wrap things up, you know, with this particular case, and we've gotten good ratings, and that's not really why we're doing it. We're doing it to uncover the truth. Go ahead, Bob or John.
I looked at the link just a few minutes ago. I didn't finish, you know, reading the whole thing down. It's possible that he was killed in connection with the grand jury testimony.
I guess Dorian Johnson is still under protection in the same way that Darren Wilson will never probably see the light of day in Missouri again. They're probably going to have to shuffle him out of there through Mazatlan or something. So he resigned as police officer today. John was aware of that. Were you, Bob?
Yeah, I heard it on the news a few hours ago.
Well, I picked through all the grand jury testimony. There was 13 to 24 witnesses. About half said that after Brown was shot, he did raise his hands and approach the cop to try to talk to him. And the other half said that when he did approach the cop, he still had a combative look on his face. So, like I've discussed with my friend tonight, it doesn't matter how many eyewitnesses there are. People were giving diverse accounts of what happened that night. John, are you with us?
Oh, yeah, I was just waiting to see if Bob had a comment on that.
I heard on a news program a summary of the physical of the autopsy results, the physical evidence that they were to able to. The physical evidence was that Officer Wilson, in his there was blood on him, on his uniform rather, and in the car that was, you know, Michael Brown's Wilson testified that Brown punched him or tried to punch him about 10 times, hit him solidly about twice. You know, the emergency room report testified that he had been seriously injured in his left eye.
That's not what the picture showed, though.
I don't know I just know what the emergency reports, emergency room report mm-hmm. said. And that, in Sanford, Florida, where that incident happened, they had a picture taken from some distance showing, like, nothing wrong with the back of the security guard, whatever his name was, Zimmerman. But then if you got a close-up picture, it not only showed it, again, the emergency room report, you know, and Zimmerman confirmed that.
Zimmerman?
Yes, I know, but you said that's not what the picture shows, and I'm saying that also in the Zimmerman case, the first picture that was shown on the news media everywhere, you know, gave a very different. It was a very small picture from a difference, and
okay.
It didn't show the actual injuries that the emergency room, you know, found on Zimmerman. And likewise, I don't know what the picture that you're talking about. I'm saying that the
it was on
physical,
Nancy
physical,
Grace two nights ago. They showed the close up and the side view and the front view. Now, before John jumps in, it was 9 whites and 3 black members of the jury that heard 70 hours of testimony from 60 witnesses. And those 12 people together decided not to indict the officer. John, what say you?
Well, it's first of all, it's really sad, and I feel sympathy for both sides. I mean, I totally get people on the street being harassed. I totally get ill will over the years with cops abusing power. I've run into that. I understand that. A couple things. We're supposed to have a jury of our peers, so if you had 9 out of 12 were white, that's about, 75%. So, yeah, you know, you get, 10 to 15% black population, maybe it's a little higher in some areas. So I would call that a jury of the peers if you went that way. But the thing is, you know, we talked earlier, you said, example, a good thing for him would have been, speaking in this last case, that the police officer should have waited for backup, you know, maybe stayed in his car, et cetera, et cetera. It sounds good on paper, but when you're on the street, and the cop's there, and you're on the street, you need about 1 or 2 seconds to, jump behind a building, run down the street, and the cop's driving in the car going, hey, stop, please stop, I'm waiting, if you can wait 3 minutes for my backup to come here, and we'll have a safer situation. You know, you have to immediately confront the situation if you think there's danger, if you think there's a gun, et cetera, et cetera. Now, the question is, and this is something I just kind of, it's my own vibe, and that is, I should write a book on things that, you know, how to be a dumbass. If you want to be a dumbass and a cop calls you out, puts a light on you, yells your name, identifies himself, whatever, first thing is make sure he gets real nervous. Don't listen to him. Be aggressive. Yell back. Flip him off. If he comes towards you, act like you got something in your pockets. Behave real nervously. Jitter a little bit. And, you know, possibly you can get that cop to maybe pull a gun and shoot you. I know that's kind of siding with cops, but I'm just saying that's the situation on the street. If you're going to be a dumbass, you're going to get shot. And I'm not saying the cop is 100%
correct. Well, he did swear
at
the cop. He bullied the cop.
There you go.
He said, "You're a pussy. Let me see what you can do." So, I mean,
right.
I mean, this kid had no fear, no respect for authority. And I put my life on the line this week by writing an article saying that I would fight with my own blood for justice. So maybe I'll die in vain. Who knows?
So we're talking about remember the days of the Wild Wild West, people shooting things up, and sheriff comes in with the white hat and the white horse and starts, to establish law and order. I don't know. It just seems to me if people are going to be that flip about authority, I kind of don't want them around, It's like,
well, I think
if they're that way with the cop,
too.
How are they going to be with me? How are they going to be with me and my car, my possessions, my wife or girlfriend or kids or church community? Like I was saying, at our church, we've had cops come out a couple times and they say, the music's too loud, neighbors are complaining. You never see a thing like they're shooting or threatening and we're yelling at them and, they're pulling their guns. It doesn't happen. Maybe one in a million times. It's always dumbass people running around on the street in dark areas or in, areas that are not, they're high crime areas, and then they respond in a way that a thug would. And I'm not saying he did anything wrong. I'm just saying he was stupid.
Okay, well, before Bob jumps in, I just want to give one piece of testimony and then say one more comment.
Oh, yeah.
This witness said he stopped, he turned, he did some sort of body gesture. The witness testified, but it was not a surrender motion. I could say for sure he never put his hands up after he did his body gesture. He ran towards the officer full charge. Now, the fact of the matter is two other witnesses said he put his hands in his pants. He had already been shot once, so maybe he didn't have full body control. It's really hard to say after observing all the testimony, but Darren Wilson failed to turn in three incident reports. There were like three different kinds of incident reports that was required within 48 hours, and all he did is put the date, the time, and the victim's name, but he filled out none of the rest of the report. Now, I don't know if he got sidetracked or what, but...
He also, too, he may, when you're writing stuff down and that there's, this is serious stuff and it's going to be national and everyone's going to tear it apart like the O.J. case, they're going to put the cop on trial. You don't want, even if it's the truth, you don't want to put something down that can be taken and apart by a lawyer. So you kind of want to not say anything, and I'm not saying that's the case, but I have a feeling there are probably, some protocol things he missed, maybe, or he stepped out of order. Maybe he got nervous. Maybe he pulled his gun a little too quick. Whatever the situation, I don't know. I don't want my policemen running and hiding from people on the street that are, that are that defiant. Maybe I'm just, I'm missing something.
Well, the kid was defiant. Now, I'm going to let Bob jump in after I give this second totally different testimony.
To hesitate and not do anything and let this guy run around and they do their stuff?
The only thing I disagree with was six shots, and my boss said that they have to go for body mass because if they go for both arms or both legs, they're probably going to miss. They have to go for body mass, and that's what they go for.
Right.
So at least one witness agreed with Wilson, the one who said Brown ran towards the officer full charge. Those who testified that Brown had already been wounded said the charge was more like a wounded stagger. He was going down definitely, said the witness watching from the balcony, and the officer just let out a few more rounds to him and he hit the ground, and that's when I seen blood. And he was taking small steps like he was stumbling. The officer lets out some more shots, and that's when he hit the ground.
Right. I mean, it's kind of like this. If say you're in Malibu, you're West Side, you're Beverly Hills, you're in a nice restaurant, cop comes in, he's throwing some attitude, and you go, listen, hey, we're minding our own business, officer, or I'm a respectable citizen, fine. I understand standing up for your rights, but if I'm in the hood and there's three homies coming towards me and they got their hands in their pockets with hoodies and a cop pulls up and puts a light on them, I don't want that cop going, I'm going to wait and just let homies do what
this was noon.
On the street.
It was broad daylight. There were two roofers there. There was one maintenance guy in the building, At least five of the witnesses were either maintenance or utility people from the city or something like that. Now, you and Bob can talk about it. I'll be back in 60 seconds.
What do you think, Bob? I mean, I know I'm kind of I'm being
well,
Joe Cop here, but
I had wanted her to hear. You know, I think she should go take a piss before the show begins.
There's a point to both sides too. We don't want
the next minute. I want her to hear this because you know she's, she's either doesn't have a lot of the facts or doesn't want to have them.
You talking about me?
Yes, I'm talking about you.
Bullshit! I read through 25 pages of testimony last night. Half the country doesn't even know that DeAndre Joshua is dead.
I think that's an important thing that people should know. Next, if I may return to the physical evidence, inside the police, okay, Wilson testified that there was a struggle over the gun, and that his gun went off and shot the teenager in the hand, and at that point the teenager ran away. The physical evidence was that there was Brown's blood was on Wilson's uniform, and it was in the car, and also they found gunpowder, on Brown's left hand. Okay, now verifying that this kind of struggle did happen inside the car, despite witnesses that say, "Oh no, he never got anywhere near the car." Then at the actual shooting, Brown testified that he was giving chase. Wilson testified that he was giving chase to Brown, and Brown turned around and came at him, charging at him. Okay. Now there were witnesses that said, "Oh no, he had his hands up and surrendered." But the autopsy report says that there were the powder spread over. Over Brown's body.
How can
the
autopsy report know how high Michael Brown's arms were in the air or how low Michael Brown's arms were? How can an autopsy report indicate that?
Let me talk a little bit. You've been talking quite a bit. Let me talk. There were witnesses. A lot of witnesses said that he was shot in the back after he. One person said after he fell on the ground, he was lying on the ground. He was shot in the back numerous times. The autopsy says there were no shots in his back or no shots at him from the rear. No bullets, that hit him. Darren Wilson testified that he was 5 or 10 feet from Brown as Brown was charging him when he fired. On Brown, on his two hands, his right hand had no powder marks on it. None. That means he didn't have his hands up in the air when he was shot. It's just the autopsy reports do not support the testimony of many of the witnesses. And the autopsy reports to support just about everything Officer Wilson said. Okay, that's all I have to say.
I'm glad you researched it from your angle. Now, this is what happened to me, Bob, and you are partially right. When I wrote the article for the Duluth News Tribune in early October, I only had Dorian Johnson's testimony. Nobody knew until those grand jury private information was released on Monday or Tuesday, nobody else knew what the transcript said. Nobody knew what Darren Wilson went through. There was just a bunch of huffy people mad that they gunned down an 18-year-old. Now, then when I wrote my second article saying I would die for blood justice in the streets and I was expecting the Duluth cops to hound me any day, I was still pretty much basing it on what had happened in Cleveland, and it seemed to be a growing trend that black kids were being terrorized. Now, I know that these kids did something to obviously engage in a confrontation with the cops. Now, I don't consider Michael Brown an angel or even well-mannered. I can't speak for the 12-year-old who was just goofing around with an airsoft gun, but it just seems like based on the Gina 6, the Trayvon Martin case, and a handful of other cases leading up to Michael Brown, that it seems like it's not just African-Americans, because my friend A.B. Fofana marched in New York with all people of all races. They marched 23 miles. A lot of people are upset about police brutality. And then Soledad O'Brien aired a special, a one-hour special on New York police brutality that I'm pretty sure she pre-taped way back in September or October. So CNN had just happened to release it this week. It was last week. It was called Black and Blue. And there was a sophomore in college who has been stopped 93 times by the Brooklyn police, and he's never committed one crime. He just looks like a suspect because he's tall and thin. So
people did gloss
over the fine details, and they're just angry in general is what I'm saying.
Let me just get a couple sentences, and I'll turn it back over to you and Mr. Yoder. There is definitely police brutality. There are many, many people shot and killed who shouldn't have been, definitely shouldn't have been killed, maybe shouldn't have even been shot at all. I believe if you're going to raise an issue over it, I think that the 12-year-old in Cleveland is a good example of something that should never have happened. However, I think that Michael Brown caused his own death. He is not any kind of example at all of someone who was wrongfully shot. He's an example of someone who caused a policeman to shoot him, and there shouldn't be. He shouldn't be brought up as the poster child for a campaign against police brutality. I think the 12-year-old child is a very good, poster child for a campaign against police brutality, and I've had my say. Thank you.
Thanks for joining us, Bob. We'll be having another show on Wednesday, and I wasn't trying to steal the show. You can stay on the last 10 minutes if you want. Go ahead, John.
I know, being raised in the church, and I've lived I've lived on the east side in San Jose, which is like it's a similar version of East Los Angeles, but there's an area called Tropicana, and we'd have to drive through there. I can only tell you, I just, working with church kids and people, you just don't see this stuff happening, I know things happen, but it's always, well, it's in the hood, and it's with the boys, and they were out and running around, and it just always seems to happen with people that put themselves in bad situations. Now, I think with police brutality, I think what happens is you run into about, after a couple years and a few thousand times of encountering people that are on the street, you just get tired, or you get aggressive, or you get, I think it's really hard to keep a balanced profile. I had a friend that tried out for sheriff's department in San Jose. He failed the psychological. He had everything else down. He did the academy, he did all his testing, training, his firearms, all that stuff. He's a student. When he went to the psychological, he failed it. And kind of back then, it's like if you failed, you kind of had to go to another county. So he tried Santa Clara County. He failed it. He tried, kind of moved up Hayward and Fremont and so forth. And finally, he changed his disposition, his approach on the psychological. Because he was coming in as a friend, as a nice guy, as a kind of a serve and protect dude. He came in as RoboCop. He came in as, aggressive, decisive, and quick. They didn't want a soft cop in the force. And because that's a guy that's going to get killed real quickly, or is going to be in a, and I can say I've seen several instances of police encountering people on the street, and they had to make split-second decision being attacked. And it's one of those things, until you encounter it, I don't like police being aggressive, but I don't, you know, wherever I'm at, I'm not in fear of police. I'm in fear of the, you know, the brothers, the homies, the people in the corner, the people walking around, you know, and it doesn't matter day or night. You walk, you know.
Afraid of police.
Have they ever shot you and beat you up, like white?
Well, Darren Wilson, I wanted to mention, he served in another small town, and he was so unremarkable that the chief of police didn't even remember him. When the press came to interview him, they said he never got in trouble, so I don't recall him. He was an average Joe. So I just wanted to say one time I tapped like a finger on a table. I tapped a license plate in front of the laundromat. And at 10 o'clock at night, the cops came to my door and said, I have a report that you've been involved in a hit and run.
Oh, mercy.
And I said, no, that's not true. They said, well, two people at the laundromat said that you left after you hit their vehicle. And they said that something was hanging from their car. Well, I went down to their house at 10:30 or 11 at night, took pictures of the front and back end of their car, and there was a heater plug hanging from the heater, because in the wintertime, some Minnesotans have heater plugs. And her stupid boyfriend didn't know what it was, and that's what it was. And the cops said they're going to go take pictures of the car and call me in 2 days, and they never called back, but they scared the bejesus out of me by coming to my house at 10 o'clock at night to accuse me of that.
Right. But the problem is when stuff like that happens to us, we go, where's a cop, right? And then when we finally get one, it's like, well, we don't want this or that, you know, that kind of presence. Did you think they were going to shoot you?
No, but I did scan 5 or 6 pictures and send them to the police email later that night because I was so paranoid.
I mean, I agree. It's annoying.
No, I didn't think they were going to shoot me, but one time I had a worse incident with the Duluth police where I posted a Jim Morrison line, and I said, not everyone's meant to live forever, and my high school friend who lives 3 hours south of here thought it was a suicide threat. And she called the Duluth cops, and they came to my door for that, too.
And they have to respond, because if they, you know, something happens and then they don't respond, then they get sued like they were, you know, non. It's like, it's really hard to win if you're a cop. If you don't do anything, get pissed.
What if I wrote something like I'm drinking arsenic and Old Lace? I'm drinking black Kool-Aid mixed with oil. I mean, it wasn't, my statement was very obscure, like not everyone's meant to live forever.
Right.
But I didn't say I wanted to die.
Right. I don't know. I really haven't lost a lot of sleep worrying about, you know, the police. I mean, I'm very aware of them when I'm in the hood or other places like that. And I'm aware that I need to be careful, and they're going to be over conspicuous. You know, they're going to be, some of them, they want to be super cops. I get that. And I respect that. It's like, okay, as long as you get the bad guys. But I think I'd rather have a little bit of that than a passive police force with aggressive criminals, you know.
I had
maybe
one other bad experience and one other good experience, but I'm not going to get into it tonight. The good experience really worked in my favor. Bob, have you ever been stopped by the cops?
I remember clearly a couple times that when I was a teenager, one time I was in the middle of it, like January, and I was walking. I was on the bus, and I forgot. I was sleeping. I didn't get off the stop I was supposed to. So I got woken up at the end of the line, and I had to walk back. I had to walk like 8 or 9 miles to the town where I should have gotten off at. And this is like, you know, 3 in the morning on a cold night, and I didn't have a jacket, you know. And at one point, police were looking for somebody, and they shined flashlights on me and told me to stop, and I did. And they came over to me, asked me to take my shirt off, and I did. And they were looking for a tattoo of a spider. on my upper chest, or, and they didn't find one. I explained, you know, what I was doing at that time of night, and they let me go. That was one occasion when the police stopped me. You know, they were looking for somebody. I think somebody who had committed a rape is what I think had happened.
Mm-hmm.
And I had another similar incident, you know.
Was that in Florida or the Midwest?
The one I just told you?
Yeah.
This is up in New Jersey, because it was, you know, a cold winter night.
Oh, okay.
Yeah.
Sorry to hear that. It sounds kind of freaky.
Well, you know, I was a potential suspect. But I was completely compliant. They said stop, and I did. They said take your shirt off, and I did. You know. And, you know, they examined me and decided I was not the guy that they were looking for.
Thank God.
So.
And thank goodness you had that tattoo removed, too. No. there are situations, you know, where it's like, you know, say you did have a tattoo, and maybe they think, well, it, you know, maybe it's a monkey or a spider or something, or like a turtle or something. And they go, well, it could be a spider. I mean, there's certain times where you match, you know, a personal match, a certain profile. I was in one of those situations where I just happened to be at the wrong place at the wrong time, and police thought I was someone who was, because I was helping moving my mom, and I stopped at 12 at 7-Eleven to get something to eat because we didn't have any food, and I used the ATM in there, and I matched the profile of a guy driving around with a moving van ripping off, houses, and I could hear a radio behind me. I could hear the cop radio, and I'm like, you know, and I could, and as I turned around, I noticed that they had, you know, they had their hands on their guns because they were nervous because this guy apparently was an armed, dangerous person. And I was very carefully turned around and said, here's my hands. And, you know, you want my ID? And I told him everything I was doing. I'm using two fingers and pulling the wallet out of my pocket. And I kept them really cool. And was my heart racing? It sure was. But you know what? I'm sure theirs was racing just as much as mine. It just happened to be, you know, one of those mismatches. It happens, you know. I don't know how you get around that because they were trying to find someone that was very dangerous.
Yeah. Was that up in San Jose? I'm kind of losing my train of thought.
That was in the valley when I was helping my mom move. It was about, you know, 7 or 8 years ago. But it's one of those things, the minute I heard, you know, I didn't even have to, you know, talking about things that dumbasses do, the minute I heard the, you know, police calls, you know, it's like cops. It's like, keep it really nice and slow and cool. I want to get out of life. And the other thing, they called because they wanted my number. They asked you the typical, where do you live, what's your address, why are you here in the valley and you live in Santa Monica, what's your phone number. They called the house line and asked Slick some questions, you know, like, does a John Yoder live there? And they were going through all the protocol. And he said, yeah, he does. Is there a problem? And they said, no, we just wanted to ask some questions. So, no. He started arguing with them, you know, what's going on? Where is he? What, you know, it's like, those are things that get them pissed off, you know. It's like I'm trying to keep them calm, and he's having a dumbass argument with them. It's like, don't argue with the police. They got their guns. I want to get out. Oh, and he was like, we could file a report. We could do this or that. It's like, you know what? I just don't want to get shot. It doesn't matter. Once you get shot, you can't. Doesn't matter who's right or wrong. You can't go back and bring me back. Just keep my mouth shut. They got, you know, they went. They're still looking for their man. I got out alive. I'm a happy camper.
Yeah. In L.A., it's a lot more complicated because there's so many people.
If you see the security people, like with like the armed guards, like Loomis or, you know, the different companies, on the west side, yeah, they walk around with guns and this and that. But on the I was in kind of like a downtown L.A., when they came out to go to one of the stores, I mean, it was like a military operation. Two guys jumped out. They got their hand. I mean, they got their gun in their hand. They're not like waiting. And one goes ahead of the other, waits by the doorway, puts a stance position. The other guy's coming, and you know, in these like big buff dudes, and he's got the bag with the money from the store in one hand, he's got the gun in the other hand, and they're walking, and it's like, why are they doing this? They want to go home alive. Because some dumbass is, you know, they want to all the dumbasses to know, don't even mess with us. Don't even think about it. Because people do. That's what happens. And they don't want to end up dead. So
all I can remember about LA, I never remember, I got stopped for going through a stop sign in Northridge once, but I was a police informant in Boyle Heights, and I've mentioned that before. I just, there were shots in my neighborhood in East LA, and I decided to become an informant. So that was 14 years ago, so I don't think, I think it's safe for me to say it now.
Well, and you know what happens with this, when things do, crimes do happen, they can't get any witnesses. How come? Because everyone's afraid of the bad guys, right? They're afraid
to
say anything.
And I was a stranger in the neighborhood. I had nothing at stake. But I remember when an 18 or 19-year-old Latino was killed, and people in my building knew him. I lived on the corner of 4th and Hollenbeck. And they cried, Bam Bam got killed, Bam Bam got killed. And it was really a sad day.
Oh, very, very, you know. I mean, beyond all this, we want peace on earth, goodwill towards men, especially this time of year. We want peace on this earth. We want resolution. We want forgiveness. And I just don't see that happening when people don't go to church, they don't seek God, they aren't spiritual in nature. You watch the videos, the rap, and with the attitude, you look at, you know, Justin Bieber, when he's, you know, look how punked out he's been hanging out with his, you know, thug-a-ruggus friends. You know, these aren't, he's not going to church like he used to. He's not a good old boy when he started out. He's just, his manners have corrupted, and it's not been in a good spin.
A lot of the world has gone downhill like that. Now, since you're already on a roll, why don't you do your wrap-up? We have like 1 or 2 minutes left.
Well, you know, in speaking of Mr. Bieber, he lives, among other places, Calabasas, and he's gotten quite a reputation for flying down the streets in his, I don't know if it's a Maserati or whatever he's got, but, you know, he's driving 100-something down the streets, and Keyshawn Johnson actually ran him down, the celebrity football, ex-football player, followed him to his house, and Bieber wouldn't get out of the house. He had gates, because he wanted to confront him about it. But I guess I would say is follow the truth wherever it leads you, unless it's a crime prevention meeting with a group of people protesting and burning buildings. You know, we want to peacefully try to work through with love for everyone on the planet, and hopefully we'll all get out alive, or in this case of Jim Morrison, I guess we don't get out alive, but at least in one piece.
I think a small sliver of us will get out alive. I think a lot of people have turned to darkness, whether it's the ISIS slicing off heads or judgmental conservative Christians. I think a higher chunk of us, you, me, and Bob, are going to see the pearly gates.
I sure hope so.
Bob, you can finish it out with your last statement.
Oh, I think this is an important topic. Yeah, because so many people are killed by the police every year.
Mm-hmm.
I think another big part of it, we didn't discuss another big part of it, and that part needs to be addressed also, but maybe for another episode or something. Yeah. So thank you for having this topic.
Thank you for everyone joining us. I'll be in LA in 20 days. Look out, media.
Okay.
We'll secure the borders.
Look out, LAPD.
With any luck, Kim will be back by then.
Well, we'll see how good Homeland Security is, I guess, at LAX, all right?
I'll be at your door within 20 minutes of landing, John. Rick,
if you give me 24-hour notice, and that way I can make the appropriate plans.
Slick will be picking me up, and we're staying in your soundproof studio.
Wow. just think what a difference 10 years makes. I mean, Marguerite won't be, I mean, wow, it's different.
And Lauren's 6'2" and 270, so get a sturdy car.